Who's tired? First of all, what I wanted to tell you on this session specifically, we're not going to run the full 75 minutes. So my expectation is to finish within probably 60 minutes. That's not because I might be tired or I don't want to talk to you. It's because of the amount of content that I have and the things that I could tell you about installing SQL Server on Windows Server Core. Which means after that, after those first 60 minutes, you can stay as long as you want, ask me additional questions on anything you want on SQL Server. Okay? And I'm serious about that. You could ask me anything you want on SQL Server. And is that Grant that just walks in? No, it isn't. I can barely see it. Okay. So yeah, that would be approach for the session. Is that okay with everyone? It's a small group to me, so if there's questions that come up during the session, feel free to ask, interrupt me. If you raise your hand in the back and I can't see it, just call my name, say, hey, Dandy, I have a question. And you see that this is a lightweight presentation that I run because everyone is getting ready in a good mood to go to the country drinks and everything that's happening tonight, right? Okay. So typical, I put my contact information in the slide. If you have that, feel free to use that. And if you look at the slide deck, you're going to see I have basically zip, zero, no slides, because what we're going to look at is installing SQL Server on Windows Server Core, look at some of the resources, what's going to be the approach, things you need to be aware of, what could be potential problems getting things configured. Okay? So this screenshot is actually a screenshot from a server that was running a company's SQL Server infrastructure. Okay, I thought it was nice. Like, oh wow, that's yeah, that's interesting. What they have sitting here on the server, and then they wonder why sometimes weird things happen on that machine. But I thought it was cool just to put it in there. Okay, that's the first slide I wanted to show you. So, how many people were in my previous session on the SQL Server 2014? That's the majority. Okay, so. Right here. I wanted to show you some insights on what I'm doing on my configuration. And to give you some background information, I'm the guy that's responsible for all the hands-on labs that we built on SQL Server. So if you go to microsoft.com/SQL Server Labs, you'll land on our hands-on labs portal. It has pre-configured virtual machines. You can actually take a hands-on lab that is installing SQL Server on Windows Server Core. There's the BI labs, the OSON, new features in Transact SQL, all of those. I actually developed all of those. Okay? Not only did I write the lab manual, I also built the virtual machines from scratch. So if we look into that, there's a lot of insights on that I could share with you on how I build everything out and what's my fastest way of releasing a new install. Actually, you might not believe it, but between the last session that I presented at, which was a SQL 2014 session, and now, I installed two brand new virtual machines, and I'm going to configure them with SQL Server 2014. Okay? So that's how I work, that's how I roll, get the latest bits, and sometimes be in front of an audience where things in your session will fail, but if you know how to recover from it, that's the learning you need to bring your audience, because that's what you're going to be running into in real life. Okay? So what I'm actually running, to give you insights, my laptop is configured with a couple of SSDs because I am very impatient. And I'm actually using Windows 8 Hyper-V enabled. So everything runs on my laptop on Windows 8, which is my desktop operating system. I enabled Hyper-V. And my virtual machines are basically configured with dynamic memory allocation. Why? Because one of the things that I could show, except for the SQL 1, 2, and 3, because I could show you with dynamic memory allocation, what the exact memory request and what the key differences are when we talk about Windows Server Core installation and the memory footprints that it takes compared to a basic Windows Server installation. Okay, so there's some key findings there. It is definitely, if you think about virtualizing SQL Server, definitely something you should consider. One of the other things you should consider is, how many of you work with Hyper-V? Okay, oh, there's hands going up. Good. So one of the things you should consider is, when you configure a virtual machine with Hyper-V, have a look at the actual configuration of that virtual machine. Because if you just go through the wizard to set up a virtual machine, what you will end up with is something like this one, okay? If I go standard through the wizard, you see that I only have one virtual processor, okay? That's the default. There's only one virtual processor assigned, even though I can assign 8 based on the hardware that I have, okay? If you want to speed things up a bit, you probably want to change that into your configuration, okay? So let's get started. How many of you installed SQL Server from the command prompt before? That's only 3, 4, maybe 5 hands. Okay. What I'm going to show you is what's the easiest way to install SQL Server on the command prompt, because it's very important to understand that before you go to Windows Server Core installations. Okay. So I think everybody knows how to install SQL Server. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to go to my, okay, I have the disk in there. That's nice, actually. And that's still on SQL 1. Okay, so I have the remote desktop to the SQL 1 here. So basically, my machine just left where I did the previous session. I can go to SQL Setup. Okay. And all of you are very familiar with the graphical installer and the domain accounts and so on that you specify as you install SQL Server. Okay. What I can do here is, I can go to installation. You can go new SQL Server installation. Hope that the thing runs fast. And then we'll go through a couple of selections that we're going to specify. And I want to show you that from the graphical interface first, because it's important to understand that before you start configuring an installation from the command prompt. Okay? So that is completed. Setup support rules are passed. And we're going to go to the graphical installer. Include SQL Server product updates. We can uncheck that. That actually is a feature that we introduced with SQL Server 2012. What that means is, during the installer, by default, you will check on the internet if there's any updates to your SQL Server installation. There's a key difference on how we, compared to other products, on how we can slipstream and service pack SQL Server. What you can actually do is, you can download the updates, put them into a folder, and then specify that update folder, which is your update source, PCU source, product, cumulative update source, as we call it. And then you can specify that during setup, so you don't need to download. I actually encourage you not to download, because I would assume you install SQL Server in secure environments where the server is not exposed to the internet. Okay? And then the only way to get the update is actually put them in a folder. I'm going to go through the initial setup. What actually happens through the entire installation process is, you're just configuring the configuration file that's going to be run the moment you decide to install SQL Server. And as you specify all of that information, everything will be compiled for you. At the end, when you hit ready to do the actual installation, that's where the configuration file is ran against the setup.exe. Okay. So what I would basically be able to do is, I can go to a command prompt. Let's just do that. I can go to a command prompt, go to my D drive, or is it D drive? Yep, it is. And I can do something like setup.exe/install /action, action equals install slash features equals DB engine replication, a lot of other options, and then an important parameter you're going to specify at the end that is called I accept SQL Server license terms. Okay. Now, if you never installed SQL Server from the command line before, there's a very important parameter you will have to specify. And it's a slash PID, which is the product ID. The advantage of SQL Server installation bits is if you go out to the website and you download an evaluation copy of SQL Server, what we actually give you are final bits. There's no difference between what you have in your box and what we have available for download. Okay? The key differentiator is when you go to the graphical installer, you have the option to select whether you want the evaluation copy, which is 180 days, or whether you want to have the product ID and you're going to enter the product ID. In some cases, in terms of volume licensing, SA, that might be pre-populated because it's actually sitting onto the bits into the configuration file. Okay? But I could specify that from the command line, go through everything, go through my installer. As I get through the installer here, okay, I'm going to specify what my options are. Now, these options here basically go into your configuration file, or you're going to specify those from the command line. So what happens is, if you decide to perform a new installation, that will translate to a parameter that is called slash action equals install. If you decide to add features to an existing, it will depend. If you decide to upgrade SQL Server, add a node to a cluster, that slash action parameter that will be specified will be different as well. I once wrote an article and someone wanted me to write something on unattended installations of SQL Server. They were looking for 2 pages on how to install SQL Server from the command line. If you really want to write that article right, it's going to be 20 pages because you want to point out the switches that are important to do so. So, I can see I have an installed instance. I'm right here, I'm going to select a new one, and I'm sorry, this might be a little boring, but what I want to get to is all these options. I'm going to go for evaluation edition. I accept the license term as a slash accept license term. And so as I go through this, this is basically the option you specify. What are my database features I want to install? Or am I going for a feature-based or what we call a role-based installation? If you take the installation of SQL Server Power Pivot for SharePoint, what's going to happen is you're actually going to go for a role-based and not a feature-based installation, which means your configuration file will look totally different. Okay? So let's go to a hit next right here. Okay? And I'm going to install a database engine, not any of the other options. I should show you. Right here, there is the Management Tools Basics and the Management Tools Complete. What are the management tools called in SQL Server? SQL Server Management Studio, SSMS, right? Now, if you install from the command prompt, that's going to translate into a parameter that is called slash features equals, and you're going to have the database engine column SSMS for SQL Server Management Studio, and what, because that's the logical assumption, right? What a lot of people don't realize is that that is only installing the basics and not the management tools complete. There actually is a switch, a parameter that you specify that is called ADV underscore SSMS, which is the advanced, which means the complete. Now, this is important because at first you'll go like, oh, I installed SQL Server from command line, everything is working, and then it turns out you go into some features that can only be configured using the advanced option, and you get weird behavior in Management Studio. Like, for example, you want to enable database mirroring. You go to the database mirrors tab, you click on the properties, And the only thing you get is the properties of the database. That has nothing to do with your SQL Server installation. It has everything to do with the tools installation. Okay? So everything you have in Transact SQL there to set up database metering and so on will be there. However, you just don't have the tool to manage it and set it up. Okay? Always go for the complete install if you are managing an enterprise edition of SQL Server. Otherwise, you might miss out on some of that functionality. Okay. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to hit next. I'm just going to accept the defaults here. Hit next. I'm going to specify I already have a default instance. I'm going to say I'm going to install an instance named one. In SQL 2005, what we basically did is if you go to the file system on a SQL 2005 installation, you see that your instance folder naming or instance ID is numbered. So you have a msql.1, while the name of the instance might be something totally different. Okay? The true story there is this: someone thought that from a security perspective, that would be a brilliant idea, not to map the folder name to the actual name of the instance. We flipped that back with 2008, 2008 R2, 2012, and now we allow you to specify what you want. My advice, keep that name, instance ID and the instance name the same. Okay? That's some guidance I want to provide you right there. Now, you can actually see here which features you are installing, okay? So right there, you see those features. And actually, those features are the features you specify from the command line as well. SQL Engine will give me a database engine. Replication will give me replication. RSS reporting services. Advanced SSMS, as you can see, is in there. Connectivity tools. And then SDK and so on, whatever you specify will be in there. Okay? I'm going to hit Next. Now, of course, it's going to ask me for the user ID and so on. I'm going to hit Next here again. Disk space requirements. I'm just going to go over to defaults and click Next. Specify that I want to add the current user as a sysadmin. What about Windows error reporting or authentication mode? Did I get stuck there? Looks like I did. What happens is, as soon as you're done with this, and it's coming, it's CTP 1 bits, it is a little bit on the slower side here. So once you walk through that entire configuration and you get that to that ready to install page, oh, thank you, we just dropped connectivity, it seems. Hit Next here. Hit Next there, hit Next there. Here it is, it's on this ready to install page where you have a path name that says this is your configuration.ini file. The moment there you click install, that's where your SQL Server installation is gonna kick off with a combination of setup.exe and a lot of additional parameters, okay? How does that translate into a command line? That translates into something that looks a little like this. Okay? Setup.exe, slash action equals install, error reporting, features, update enabled, name of the instance, what am I using for SQL agent, what am I using for the SQL service account, sysadmin account that I want to add, slash Q means quiet. What about the SQL browser, mixed or SQL authentication? What's the password? What about the startup type? A very, very important one, if you install on Windows Server Core, is a slash TCP enabled equals one. If you install on Windows Server Core, you want to enable TCP IP during the installation process. If you don't specify from the command prompt, you're going to only be working in shared memory mode, which is the default for the management tools. But you don't have any management tools because you did a command line install and you're running on Windows Server Core, so there's no graphical interface. How do you change the protocols on SQL Server? The server protocols, where do you change that? Yeah, Configuration Manager. Okay. Now, SQL Server Management Studio allows me to connect to servers that are sitting somewhere on my network, but Configuration Manager sits local on the SQL Server. You have that available in the graphical interface, and you cannot use that to connect to a remote SQL Server. Okay, which means you're going to have to use PowerShell to enable the TCP/IP protocol, and that's a pain you want to save yourself. So you better do that during setup. Okay? I'm going to show you that configuration file because the option that I can actually specify is I can take that entire path, okay, open it up in Notepad. Notepad, specify that entire path. And this is what my configuration file looks like. Okay. Oh, sorry, I'm going to switch screens. So you didn't see my typo here. That's really nice. Okay. There we are. This is how my configuration file looks like. Okay. SQL 2014 configuration file, CTP1, all the settings, action install, UI mode, quiet, quiet simple equals false, which means I have quiet as false and I have quiet simple as false. What basically happens is you just decided to do a graphical installation and see graphical progress as you install using that configuration file. Okay? If I go to the command prompt, and I specify the slash configuration file equals, and I were to use this file, first thing that my configuration will do is it will kick off and start running that in a graphical interface, which is something that I don't have available in Windows Server Core. Okay? So two options. I could specify everything from the command line as I showed you, or I could go to setup.exe, specify all the parameters like you did see in the slides, okay? Or it could be a combination of both. Who do you think that's gonna win when there's a conflict? Let's say in this file I have instance ID, we're gonna scroll down on that, and I also specify an instance ID with my setup.exe. Who's gonna win? Configuration file or the command line parameter? The command line should win, right? So that is basically what happens. It allows you to make a differentiation from what you would have in your configuration file. Okay? Looking through this, it is totally possible to specify usernames and passwords in here as well. Because here you can see the account settings, so agent service account. If you want to specify the password, the parameter will be agent service password equals, and you could put the password in there. Of course, it does not make sense putting that into your configuration file. Question? There is no way to encrypt the passwords that sit within the file. No. It is plain text. Okay? If you really care about that security, you should specify it from the command prompt as you run it. And there was a question in the back there, too. I cannot understand you from there, so is it okay I come a little bit closer? Aha! Is it possible to put in parameters so that it will ask for the password? The answer to that is no. However, if you specify and you run a command line or a batch file, or you were to script this and then kick it off with PowerShell? Yes, you can. Okay? The answer is not it depends. The answer is always yes, because the it depends will eventually lead to always yes. Okay? Might just be a bit more complex. Okay. Now, if I look on a Windows Server Core installation, what I get on Windows Server Core, I don't get all of this goodness. I don't get all of these configuration files and so on, right? So what I'm going to have to do is on a Windows Server Core installation, basically the only thing that I get is, I'll clear this, a command prompt, okay? Let me actually shut down this one and spin it back up so you can see what happens. Now, the reason I'm running this into a Windows Server Core window, and I'm not going to be able to fully maximize that, is because of the fact that I didn't install any display drivers into my virtual machine. But yeah, Windows Server Core is extremely fast in startup. Okay? It's there. You see how fast that was? What I actually did is I took the downloaded the Windows Server 2012 R2 preview installation bits that we announced yesterday as being released. So I'm actually going to use that one to do my installation from. Okay. So what I get is I get a logon, and I specify the username and password. Okay. Oops. And I get a command line, okay? Basically nothing in there that will allow me to do anything in the graphical interface. However, what you can do is you can enable a mini UI in Windows Server 2012, okay? That will give you a graphical interface, and you can enable the graphical interface on the Windows Server Core. Also, if you don't feel comfortable configuring everything on the command line, what you can do with Windows Server 2012, you can actually install everything the way you typically install Windows Server and put SQL Server on it, and then trim it down by removing the usability and UI features. Okay? That's only on Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2. 2008. Or 2008 R2, you specify during the installation of the OS whether you want Windows Server Core or you want Windows Server installation. Okay? Now, I'm sitting at the command line here. I actually explained to you that I could go to my D drive. Okay? So what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to map the media. I have it there. So I go to my D drive, and I have my SQL installation bits. What I'm going to do here is I'm just going to go real quick. Install ZoomIt, so I can zoom in even into this environment whenever I want to, okay? Key advantage, I built my own virtual machine so that I know where my tool sits inside my virtual machines. So what I'm gonna do next is, I need to configure this machine to not only be part of my domain, because I would want my SQL Server installation to be part of the domain, correct? So what I'm going to do there is I can use a tool that is a command line based tool that is called sconfig. What I can do with that is I can actually might be able to go to the properties, make that font size bigger too, okay, and run it this way, okay, because basically it's just a command line. Some of the options that I have in there, number 4 that says configure remote management. If you want to remotely manage your server, this will be on by default. Windows Update, it says Windows Update settings are manual. If I want that to be automatic and be part of my SQL installation, I can do so. Remote desktop, I can do that as well. Okay, but I can look at my network settings. So my network settings is I have 2 network adapters in this one. One seems to be getting an address that comes from this event and allows me to connect to the internet. The other one is the one that is part of my Hyper-V network that allows me to connect to my domain controller. Okay, so I can leave this blank. One of the other options I'm going to configure is look at the network settings. That's my network adapter. What else I can do is I can also configure DNS settings on this one. So what am I going to do next is I'm going to add this one to the domain. One of the first things I want to do is I want to change the computer name. Okay. The interesting thing with Windows Server Core, if you decide to join the domain, it will actually give you the option to join the domain while you're adding it to the domain, which makes it really interesting. So what I can do is the following. I can specify that I want to join the domain. I'm going to specify the domain I want to join, which is Contoso. And I'm going to specify Contoso LAP user. And the password type that in and hope it gets to my domain controller. That's taking a while, huh? And this is where we're going to network troubleshooting. What should I do first if I can't find my domain controller? It's probably DNS, right? And that's exactly what it will be. Panic and call my network admin. Okay. My domain controller is up and running. It just takes a while to join. It'll get there eventually, or it will time out. So we'll just keep this for a second here and see what happens, whether or not it will join. Now, what I did already is I actually have another server core install that I already joined to the domain. Okay? How? If I go to just to restart this one, let's shut it down. Okay? I'm then going to spin up this one. We'll start it. Let's see, that'll come up fast. So when this one's up and running now, and we'll see that's already joined to the main. Please wait. See, that's how this session actually might get over 60 minutes. Okay. So this one's in, okay. As you can see, Contoso LAP user. Type in my password, and I get my command line, okay. Now, if you want to install a Windows Server Core, there's a couple of things that you need to enable first. And one of the things that you need to enable first is the .NET framework in order for SQL Server to install. What we do on Windows Server Core is we actually run a subset of the .NET framework. So you don't run the entire one. You run a subset specifically for Windows Server Core. Some of it comes with SQL. Some of it sits on the operating system. And again, here is where you're going to have to decide whether you want to provide access to the Windows Server installation bits that come with .NET Framework 3.5.1, or when you enable the features, that you go out and you download those, and it will connect to the internet and actually download them. Okay. So what I can do here is I can go into my script folder, and by the way, I will post all these scripts on my blog as well, so you can get those afterwards, which is probably useful. What I can do is I can look into my server core installation. Okay. And I have a couple of documents there. I have a .NET FX 4.0. but I also have something that is called setframeworks.cmd. Let me open that. Okay. What I can do, and this is an older version, I can use DISM to enable features. And what I'll have to do is I have to enable .NET Framework 3, which is NetFX 3. But in order to get there, what I can do is actually first look on the features that are available for my operating system before I get there. And let me show you how that goes. Okay. So you could do DISM, like just like I have it here, /online/get features. Okay. And this will basically give you all of the features that you can enable. Okay. Now, there's some interesting ones. Okay. You could do desktop experience. You could do bits, WinFS runtime. You have failover cluster. Okay. And you have up there, I'm going to zoom in those, the NetFX 3 and the NetFX 3 server features. Okay. Can I do this right here? Ah, I lost it. I don't have Zoom it in this one installed yet. So what you first need to do is you need to, there's a dependency. The NetFX will depend on the NetFX server features. So you will have to enable that one first. Okay. You don't need internet connectivity on those. So what you're going to do is you're going to say, I want to enable the NetFX server features. So, and the syntax you're going to use for that is relatively simple. DISM /online/enable features, okay, /feature name, NetFX 3 server features, okay. And it runs successfully, and it's now ready to go, okay? What I'm going to do next is after I did this one, I'm going to enable NetFX. Okay, so NetFX 3 right there, and that's also 100% completed. Why? Because I actually cheated before I came into this session, and I already enabled that. Otherwise, this would take up to 5 minutes, because you actually, on the last one, will download, unless you specify the Windows installation media and specify your SXS sources folder, okay? That's a core requirement for you to install SQL Server 2012 or 2014. The requirement for 2008.02 is actually that you have the NetFX 2 server core. But as I said, I will post all of these up there on my blog so you can get access to those, okay? Then you have to do less typing. You could just do what I do, is put that into a document. Okay. Now, what I can do is I can then start the SQL Server installation. And what I typically do is I like to avoid typing, especially if I'm in front of you guys, try to avoid as much typing so we can really focus on the content. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to type Notepad, install. I'm going to use my tab completion. I was surprised that a lot of people don't know that, but if you're in a command line and you hit the tab key, you would actually just tab through every command name or any file name you have available. So if I were to do, there's only one with an I, so basically I could do Notepad. If I do this, okay, I could just tab through this as well. Kind of a lazy DBA sysadmin feature that might be interesting, okay? So what I have here, I have my D setup, okay? And let's just make that a little bit bigger for you guys, okay? So what I'm going to do, I have that D setup. Let me make this bigger this way. Nope. /Q means quiet, so that's action is install. The features I'm going to install is SQL Engine, just a database engine with replication. My instance name is called MS SQL Server, which is a default. Specify the SQL Service account, which is Contoso SQL Service. It's a domain account, username and password. who is part of my sysadmins. TCP enabled, as I specify, indicate progress, and then last but not least, I accept SQL Server license terms. Okay. The funny thing is that someone at Microsoft Legal said that's the best way to make it clear that people need to accept the license terms. So it's a funny one. Okay, so I have this. What I can do now, oh, wait a minute. I already might have an instance of SQL Server installed. What if I want to do a named instance? Okay, I could just use that batch file or just type everything. What I'm going to do is I'm just going to modify this one again. Okay, because what I typically do is the following. Okay, you can actually, and that goes back to the question the gentleman in the back had, can I prompt for it and ask for a parameter? What you can actually do is you could do something like this. Slash instance name is percentage one, and you specify it as a parameter at the command line. Okay? So that would give me, in this example, I can do install SQL Server from the command line, and I specify a parameter called tget. So my named instance will now be tget because it's my first parameter. It will be replaced in my batch file. Okay? Make sense? Everyone? Has that? Okay. So what I see is I see my action install and things will start flying by like crazy. Okay? Why? Because I didn't specify any of the settings whether or not I wanted to suppress what we call verbose logging. And what I'll see is that I get actions and reporting of my entire installation process. Okay? And there we go. This is how SQL Server gets installed. Isn't that easy? How long do you think this is going to run? Not too long, okay? Actually, last year at Tegget North America, I had a coffee maker on stage that I called my universal Java installer. And I made a pot of coffee on stage and checked whether I could install SQL Server faster that I can make coffee, okay? And SQL Server won. It's a funny thing I had with my wife who said, can you make me some coffee? I said, no, I'm installing SQL, I'll make you coffee immediately after. She said, that's gonna take an hour. Well, it didn't, okay? So a lot of checks that typically the graphical installer will go to, you get that right there. The good thing is I have my batch file, okay? As I get to the end of the installation process, you're gonna get your setup result. If your setup result equals zero, it doesn't mean you failed, it actually meant you succeeded and you don't have a reboot required. If it's -3, you have to do a reboot for the installation to complete, okay? And this is running, this is basically almost done. Okay, up, there we go. Instance, browser service request is issued. I can see that, done, done, done. We're almost there. Okay, setup result 0. Ta-da, SQL Server installed. Okay. That's pretty cool, isn't it? That's how I honestly have not installed SQL Server using the graphical interface for quite a while. Because what I do now is I start kicking off the SQL installation process, just let things run unattended, and I go get coffee because now I have time to get coffee, right? So I'm going to check if this one was able to join the domain. Doesn't seem like it. I'm not going to, oh, duh. Do you want to change the computer name before restarting the computer? Okay. Yes. This is something that might happen, especially in the server core instance, that a dialog box sits behind your command line, okay? So I want to call this server core 2, okay? Contoso lab user, again the password, okay, and now I need to restart, and bang, this one is joined to the domain as well. Okay? Reboots, join to the domain. I just installed two server cores. What I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna kick off the SQL installation on that one too. Okay? Since I already did the pre-install of the .NET framework, I'm actually done. I just need to kick off that installer, and that's gonna take me less than 2 minutes, right? Now, of course, I'm not gonna wait for that. What I can do here is I actually already installed SQL Server prior to coming in. So if I were to do a net start MS SQL Server, that's gonna tell me it's already been started. If I do the MS SQL $tagged, the one that I just installed, that one is started too. Wow, pretty nice feature right there. Okay, so what I'm gonna do next is I'm gonna kick the same on this one. We're gonna log on as a domain user. Okay. And so here's the sweet spot about knowing what you put in your VMs. See if my D drive is there. Yes, it is. Back to the C. Install SQL Server, default instance. Let it install and run. And I can install as many as I want. If you guys want, by the end of the session, you want 25 SQL instances on 25 different virtual machines, I can get you that easily. Okay? So now we're going to talk about management, right? How are you going to manage this? Well, in my previous session, I had this machine, right? And this is part of my domain, so that basically means that I should be able to connect to server core one. Let me check how I named that thing, just to be sure. Okay, host name, server core one. So that means, since I have a default instance and I have Windows authentication enabled, I should be able to connect to server core one. Would you all agree? We hit connect. And help, I can't connect. What's the problem?
Firewall.
Firewall, okay. Now, how do you enable firewall on Windows Server Core?
Netsh.
Yep, you can use a netshell command and then enable it. You guys used this before? Okay. One of the most read articles on my blog is exactly that one. So what I do, here, network-related error, access denied. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna go to that Windows Server Core 1 here, and we're gonna enable, okay, firewall settings. What I put in every virtual machine that I have is a couple of things. Firewall is one of them, okay? So I have two command files, one that is called all ports open. I think that kind of talks to itself. And then the other one is the Notepad SQL Server firewall config, okay? Which is using a netshell command for the ports I need for SQL Server, okay? 1433 for normal connections, 1434 for dedicated admin, also the ports for the SQL browser. And if I want to use features like service broker, or I want to use features like database mirroring or always on availability groups, I need to open the necessary ports on that one too, okay? Again, I don't like typing too much, so I have this in a batch file. I can take it from the batch file and just run it. SQL Server firewall config, that is all set. So that means that right now, if I connect, I'm connected to server core. Yay, okay. Isn't it nice when your demos just work? There's no databases there, okay? And there's no always-on availability. What it says here, hey, wait a minute, okay? The always-on feature must be enabled for the server instance before you can create an availability group. You need to go to Configuration Manager, select SQL Services. Yes, true, absolutely, if you have a graphical interface, okay? If not, you're gonna have to do this from the command line. Now, I think gentleman up front here made a comment on the previous session, like, you made that always on availability groups look so easy. Okay. Well, let's drill down into that for a second and see how we can make that a bit more difficult. So database mirroring requires a witness server for automatic failover. On SQL Server 2012, we said, let's get rid of that witness. And quite honestly, I did not know what that witness was doing there other than just looking around, hey, are they up and running? Okay. To increase high availability with SQL Server 2012, we're actually relying on the same concept that Exchange Server and Active Directory and so on uses as well. It is the Windows Failover Cluster Service. So what you have to do is you have to enable the Failover Cluster Service on your SQL Server instance, which is easy if you have Server Manager. You then just say, hey, Server Manager, add the features, failover clustering, and you're ready to go. So if I go into failover clustering on my graphical interface here, what I get is failover cluster manager, okay? If I then look at that failover cluster manager, I can, which one am I connected to? Connected to SQL 1, okay? I actually set up a cluster that has nodes to it, which is SQL 1, 2, and 3, because I added those, set up that cluster. But if you look in the storage, there's no disks, there's nothing assigned to it. It is basically just the service, the cluster service that will take care of the high availability and health check and status of SQL Server when you enable always on availability groups. What if you're already running a cluster and you want to have always on availability groups on top of that, you would just have to add the node to the cluster or create a new cluster for the always on availability groups. Okay? So fairly simple. It's a service you enable. You then go to the wizard. My advice, and I know a lot of people are like me, first time you go through is, no, my hardware is okay. I don't need to validate all these tests. I can just set it up without any validation. Yes, you can, but SQL Server won't like it. It actually might run into issues. So always use the validation, no matter what, to make sure that everything is nicely validated before you set it up. Now, what's going to be my next step? My next step is going to be going into Configuration Manager. Okay? And in Configuration Manager, of course, on the graphical interface, I can go into the SQL Server properties, okay? Properties of the SQL instance, and I have that always on availability tab. The cluster name, because you added that node, will already be there, okay? The only thing you have to do is click enable, okay? And then after that, always on availability groups is right there available for you. If you really want to get your hands-on on this, I actually have a hands-on lab that is, we have two hands-on labs. One is introduction to always-on, and the other one is managing and configuring always-on, where you're going to go through that entire process. Okay. Now, of course, what about Windows Server Core, where I don't have that option? Okay. Oops. On Windows Server Core, what you'll have to do is you have to enable the firewall, failover clustering from the command line. Okay? Now, I'm going to open you the document. Enable failover clustering. Because what you basically are going to do at that point is take this one, DISM online, enable feature, feature name is failover cluster, full server. Okay? That's how you do it on Windows Server 2012. 2008, it actually, the feature is called failover cluster without that full server option. Okay? How do I know which features? DISM/online/GAT-features. Okay? Now, can I use PowerShell for this? Yes, absolutely. You could start a PowerShell command prompt. You can then add a feature, add dash Windows feature. So you first have to load the server manager module, and then you can add the feature to it. I'm a lazy DBA. I like everything in one line rather than needing three lines. And I really look at how can I functionally enable things. If I were to do this remotely, of course, I would use PowerShell. Okay. So we're going to go and do this right here. Okay. And once that's done, let's enable failover clustering. Okay. So failover cluster is enabled. What I can do now is I can add this node to an existing cluster. Okay. And I actually have to add this node before SQL Server will be able to detect it. Okay. So what I can do here is on my cluster management, we can add a node and say that that node is called server core 1. And it's there, right? So what I'm going to do now is hit next. Again, run validation. Okay? And this validation test will run a while. But it's crucial. You really need to run that validation to make sure you're not going to run into any issues. So what I showed you is rather than setting up a node and a new cluster from the beginning, I'm adding a node to an existing one. My goal is to add a Windows Server core to an existing cluster node because I want to take advantage of that less memory footprint, the less patching footprint that we're talking about. Okay. And actually show you that all the functionality that you can think of with SQL Server is available. You could run all of that on Windows Server Core. Okay? So it's totally fine to run a full always-on availability groups on Windows Server Core. We actually have PowerShell commandlets to let you do all of that as well. Okay? Questions while this is running? Anyone? Okay, good. So while this is running, what's going to be my next step, as soon as this is done and the node is added, what else I need to do is I need to enable always-on on the SQL Server instance, which is basically saying on my current instance name, I want to go to Configuration Manager, go to the server properties and do that check mark. Since I can't do that here, What I have to do is use it in PowerShell. So I'm going to just show you the text file. Enable always on.txt. Okay. So I'm actually going to use the enable SQL always on, specify the path to the server, specify the server core 1 default instance. Okay. I can actually get there with SQL PS. Okay, and then I could type enable SQL always on minus path SQL server colon server core 1 default. Okay, I shouldn't really do this before I know that that node is added, get some errors, validation warnings basically. I might get some warnings because I'm running everything on my laptop. It's not a pure server configuration. But once we get through this, see, these are just warnings on network and multiple subnetting, which are logical warnings when you set up. Okay. It says it's not suitable. Validated. Okay. Is it added? It fails to add. I wonder whether that's a version issue. So it's going to add this to the cluster. Okay. One of the labs that we're going to be releasing next week is actually going through the entire configuration of always-on availability groups and failover clustering just there. Okay. If I don't get this running, I'm not going to worry about it and spend any time on it. I'm just going to leave it as is, because I think we get the core concepts here, right? Now, of course, there's a lot of things that you can do from a normal management perspective. I have my SQL Server core databases here. Why would I not just go to create new databases like I typically would? Okay. Or why would I not restore databases, attach, detach, the typical management that you would do on that server, right? If I look on the server properties of this, I can actually see the amount of memory, the amount of procs assigned to this, absolutely. What else I can do is if I write a new query to that server specifically, and I do a select and add version, okay, you'll see that I get the build that I'm using, okay? If you would be running this on Windows Server Core, it will tell you, in this case, Enterprise Evaluation Copy Build 9200. It will not tell you Hypervisor. It will actually tell you Windows Server Core. So what this one does, it actually says is you're running it on a virtual machine. Okay? Now, let's talk about footprint, right? I'm going to show you the actual footprint. If I go to my local disk structure, okay, the virtual machine on Windows Server Core, Windows Server Core VHDX1 here is taking 7 gigs for the installation that has a SQL Server instance already in there. Actually, I installed a named and a default instance. Okay? This is Windows Server 2012 R2, which from a bit set is slightly bigger than the Windows Server 2012 bits. Because this is a server core installation, my footprint on the disk will be smaller. If I compare this to a standard Windows Server 2012 installation, for which I typically create a base image and use differencing drives, SQL 14 CTP1. This is my differencing drive. Let me go to the base. Okay. A base VHDX file with Windows Server 2012, in my case, takes 10 gigs. So I'm saving a little over 4 gigs just on the difference between server core against a traditional server, okay? So that's a benefit there because you're saving disk, which means your virtualization will run faster and so on. You could probably use a concept of using, in my case, this base disk is actually the base OS that I only installed once. I only installed Windows Server once, then I go into Hyper-V, create differencing disks out of that, sysprep those, and start kicking off all of my installations and attendant. So if I need to spin up this environment with multiple installations of SQL Server, I am. If I want to run 5 SQL Servers, that's going to cost me less than 20 gigs. Okay, think about that because you could really optimize by partitioning that out on the disk level. Okay, so let's have a look on whether or not that. Added to the cluster, okay? It looks like it didn't add it to the cluster and it decided to kick that off. What I actually think the problem that I might have it is because of the fact that I'm running Windows Server 2012 R2 and that my older cluster is running Windows Server 2012, okay? I haven't really played around with those bits because I installed them prior to coming into this session. Okay, questions? What about PowerShell? Do I really need to manage it all with PowerShell, and can I? The answer to that is yes. We made things a lot easier than what they used to be. One of our great MVPs is actually presenting here, Alan White. He also presented at TechEd North America. And He's actually known within the MVP community as the PowerShell guy for SQL. Okay? If you have a question on PowerShell, ask Alan White. He will help you with that. So I did. And I said at some point, hey, Alan, can you give me a script that will use PowerShell to take backups of all the servers and all the databases that I have on those servers? So what he did is he shared a script with me that I think I have somewhere here. Let's exit this. A set of demos, okay? Backup job. Okay? And to give credit to Alan, extremely smart guy. What he's using is he's using SMO to take a backup, and he has some nice error handling in his script and so on. So he loads SQL management objects, has error handling in there. And so what he does, if you continue to go down that line, okay, SQL management object, description is a backup user database. I'm going to use PowerShell. What I'm going to initiate is another script that is called user backup. It's a daily job. And the outcome of this is you take a backup of every database, and the backup file is named with the exact date and time that you started the backup. Okay? Something that a lot of us do with SQL Server management jobs. I look at it and go like, wow, this is cool stuff. But with SQL Server 2012, we actually optimized our PowerShell libraries, and we made things easier for you, okay? So everything that Alan is basically doing there with that backup file, and I'm going to show you that user backup because that's what the script relates to. Notepad, user backup. Okay. It's like a full script here. And it is something that nowadays could be done with the SQL 2012 PowerShell backup script, okay? So the entire script that he's kicking off, I can totally do that in four lines of code. You start SQL PowerShell, and you navigate like you're navigating through a directory. So you could go cd SQL. SQL Core Demo was the name of my SQL instance. This would be Server Core 1 in this case. I can go to the defaults, the databases, the tables, the columns, just go to the entire level. And what I say here is for each database that I have on that server, backup SQL database statement, backup action is backup the database and specify the backup file and give that as a parameter. Okay? This is PowerShell SQL. So what you do is you enable PowerShell, and within SQL Management Studio, you can actually go through. What actually I can do is a couple of options. So let me modify this and say this is Server Core 1. Okay. So I can save this. Let's exit it. We'll do SQL PS. And then what we'll do is we'll do SQL 2012 database backup.ps1. Okay, and it gives me an error. It says the path does not, of course the path does not exist. So what I can do is I could start that with SQL PS directly from the command line. Or what else I can do, if you're in a graphical interface, so that's my error message on the cluster node. Timeout. Okay. Might be a connectivity issue. So what I can do here is I can do exactly the same in Management Studio and start PowerShell right here. Okay. So that's going to give you a SQL PowerShell command line. Okay. And so you can actually get a directory of the databases. or you could drill down into the databases. Or what I can do is I could use that backup SQL command statement. So I could see I have one database called backup DemoDB. Let me just minimize that and show you that backup command right next to it. I'm kind of wondering if I have this in this VM as well. Let me have a look. I should. Script server core SQL backup, okay. So yeah, what I actually can do is I can run this entire script, save for each database in, take a backup of that database.
Okay.
And that will run just smooth and fine. We're actually working with some of our MVPs to do a full PowerShell hands-on lab, looking at each of those options and the capabilities you have there, looking into server configuration, security settings, and so on. But it takes a lot of scripting. Okay, that's something our MVPs really enjoy doing. As I said, I think from a timing perspective, we're somewhere between 60 and 75 minutes. Any questions you guys have on SQL Server, feel free to ask. I feel like at an event like this, and especially with Ask the Experts tomorrow evening, there should no questions that should remain unanswered, is what I typically say. If there's anything that even after the event that you guys have questions about, my contact information is in the slide. You could download the slide deck, the video, and complete the evaluation on channel 9. I always promise if someone sends me an email, I will get you an answer. Presenting at an event like this is at times very intensive, so it might take a day or two, but I promise I'll get you an answer. Okay? Thanks, everyone.